Of course, if Orchestra Manu was in the Dark or OMD were correct and the future will be silent, well, we'd probably end the reading of radio right there. Fortunately, it isn't. We've still got some hinkling of noise here. And after that wonderful build-up provided by Adrian Wigglesford about our next guest, we're very excited, are we not, Hannah, are we not, Tessa, to welcome the amazingly talented Gareth Kavanagh to the programme. How are you, Gareth?
What a builder. I don't know how I can live up to this now.
Of course you can, Gareth, because, as I say, after having one or two challenges with a missed digit trying to get through to the Wigglesford Meister, we thought all was well with the world and we can connect with your good self. And, of course, I get Hannah to say those immortal two words, which, of course, will form the basis of a whole new musical. Those words are...
Warp, warp.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I mean, how else could you put into words the sound of the TARDIS dematerialising? It's a very clever piece of writing from a guy called Steve Moore in 1979, who coined that phrase. Mm.
So, Gareth, where do we find you today, then, on this wonderful 1st of March, St. David's Day 2017? Where are you located in time and space?
Time and space. Mm. Well, I've had a very busy day today because I've been out and about shifting arcade machines around, because one of many things I do is I refurbish and supply old arcade classics. So today I've been shifting around a House of the Dead, a Sega Star Wars, and a table. So that's been my day, really. So I'm down on the farm in my secret lair, tinkering away. It's like a super shed, really.
Well, that makes wonderful sense. Hannah, without actually reading out the telephone number, I'd like you to read Alan Stevens' little line there, which I thought was indirectly quite flattering to this very programme. So please deliver it away with respect to, obviously, the warp, warp start.
OK. Warp, warp, magazine luminary Gareth...
Kavanagh.
Mm. Please meet radio presenter Alex Levchuk. So please drop him a line, and then you can appear on his brilliant show and tell the listeners all about your excellent magazine.
That's why you're here, Gareth. You know, it's Alan Stevens line that effectively leads you to get that invite to join us on the Midweek Drive and speak with both Hannah and Tessa.
Well, good old Alan. Good old Alan.
Tessa.
Did you guys know Alan?
Well, yes, is the short answer. No. We've worked. But actually, Tessa, you've spoken to Alan several times, I think, on the programme. I've been fortunate enough to meet him. Yeah. You'll get a chance to meet him, of course, on March the 19th. He will be coming together with Professor Fiona Moore from Royal Holloway College to actually launch with Remembrance of the Daleks.
So yeah, no, I've not met him in person yet, but I'm sure we've spoken on the radio before.
Absolutely. And
great fun. Knows his stuff.
He does indeed.
You know, don't get a fact wrong on his watch.
I'll best do my research before I meet him.
It's actually Alan who gave me an acknowledgement together with Fiona Moore in the second Battlestar Galactica book, actually. Absolutely. Yeah. Hannah, questions for Mr. Kavanagh.
Well, as you were mentioning the arcade machines, one thing that popped to mind, do you have a favourite classic arcade game?
Oh, yeah. Well, lots and lots, because I grew up in Llandudno on the coast, so I spent my entire, you know, life that I could outside of school in there. I suppose my favourite is still the original Donkey Kong, still the gold standard of gaming in every sense. So, yeah, probably Donkey Kong.
And not Pac-Man.
I was going to say that, Pac-Man.
Yeah, I play Pac-Man.
I like Pac-Man. I've got some original Pac-Man machines, and you know what's great about them? It doesn't matter how much you've had to drink, you can always play Pac-Man.
That's a good selling point.
I think so.
Or indeed watch Pixels, which is an interesting movie,
that's fine.
We were talking about, wasn't we, in TV the other day, about the old Nokia that's coming back with the snake.
Yeah, with Snake.
Ooh, the Snake game, like, so.
Snake was good,
It's just...
So, yeah, these old classics are great. They're being appreciated and refurbished. And, you know, here in Manchester, they're appearing in some of the swankiest bars and being appreciated as works of art and cultural artefacts. It's a beautiful thing. It's a bit like Doctor Who. They've gone full circle from being a little bit of a joke, slightly forgotten, and now being appreciated as cultural artefacts. So
it's kind of... It's kind of like vinyls and everything as well. They're all coming back in, aren't they? Everybody's having buying the vinyls and records.
It's like going into a retro store. Of course,
going back in time.
Mentioning Manchester, there was a year ago today, as I was reminded by that social networking site, that together with Emma Tinson, I hectored over to the Fab Cafe in Manchester to do a live report there with the fine Jordan Rice and Ed Fortune and various others from the Starburst base. Have you connected with the world's longest magazine for fantasy and science fiction, Gareth? Because I'm sure you, if you haven't, you probably should.
Oh no! Oh, I know the guys well. They're good guys. They do what they do on a shoestring, incredibly every month. And of course, they saved Starburst from the scrap heap.
Exactly.
So they're heroes.
Exactly.
This is yes, Fab Cafe is a great place. You know, they're good guys. They're on the side of the angels.
But we're here to talk about Volume 3, the double issue of Warpfort magazine, in which you can see Alan Moore talking Doctor Who. Teaser excerpt from the interview.
Extensively.
The Mechanical Planet, an amazing free gift, the Mechanical Planet audio with David Graham. Yes, the voice of Hiram Hackenbacker and Parker, being the Golden Emperor of the Daleks. And, of course, TV Century One Daleks celebrated. Hannah, does this appeal to your Whovian tastes?
Well, it sounds like it. Well, most things Doctor Who appeal to me anyway. But yeah, it sounds really interesting. Is there specific places we can get this from, or is it available?
How can we get hold of this, Gareth?
How can you seize your copy?
Yes.
Well, at the moment, we're taking orders online at warp.co.uk. We were lucky to get that. Warp.com is something entirely different. I wouldn't go there. But warp.co.uk is us. So yes, you can order online, and we're going to be shipping in the next 10 days. There will be a chance to pop into well-known stores, well-known specialist sci-fi and comic stores at some point in the future, in the next couple of months. But if you want to get your mitts on it early, you've got to come direct to us.
And so after a lot of warping about, we are pleased to announce Warp Warp Volume 3 is now ready to be pre-ordered. A bumper 208-page edition will be shipping early in March 2017 and only costs 999 pence.
Who does the lovely illustrations and colours? That is lovely. I was looking on there, we're just looking at the webpage now. Mm. It's bursts of colour and everything. It's lovely. Mm.
Mm. It's really well designed. I started off Warp, and I made the sensible decision, if you're doing a magazine, you get the best designer you possibly can. And my designer is a guy called Colin Brockhurst, who is a genius. He was so good, I said, look, come on, let's work on this together. So we did the first couple as co-editors, and then he's edited and designed this last issue. And I just sort of, you know, think big thoughts and drink tea. It's lovely. But no, it's not quite like that. But Colin is now the editor, and he's earned that in his own right. I'm publisher, so I do the boring businessy things and get to talk to nice people and come up with ideas. So it's wonderful. We get on well. And even though we've never met, or we've never even spoken on the phone, we just email. But it makes for a good working relationship.
Yes.
Like a whole new space-time existence, isn't it, really? It's amazing.
It is. It's like I can only talk to him through a wormhole.
And Preto,
it's good. It's good. We're proud.
Does Dylan Reese have any connection with this, or is that somebody that Alan Stevens has simply thrown at us from another sort of dimension entirely?
Oh, now I don't wish to offend Dylan, because
we've left a couple of voicemails. He's probably given me the wrong number. It's been like Adrian Rigglesford, you know. It's not to say, you know, Alan suggests, you know, Gareth, he says you should have this chap on, etc. It's all right, you know, we're not going to push it any further. It's still okay. We know where we're going.
He may be in it. The thing is, because it's so large, and because the issue was
208 pages. 208 pages.
That's a lot of pages.
Exactly.
It has been written over 6 years, so people have dropped in and out all along the way. Because we nearly brought it back a couple of times. I mean, there's been out there in different dimensions, there's different versions of issue 3 that have come out earlier or have come out later or have different things in them. But I think the one you have is the best, which is this one.
There we are.
But I would say that.
And the website to go to is, of course, warpwarp.co.uk. That's VWORP.
I don't think anybody will forget that.
Wow.
It's a memorable
time.
Very,
.co.uk. Yeah.
Well, I can't claim credit for the name, I must admit. the name originally Walk Walk was going to be a book when we back in 2007, and I was working with two guys, and Matt Badham, who's done some bits and bobs in this, said I think we should call it Walk Walk because we were going to do a book looking at the comic strips, and we were going to do a focus on each era and then do a sort of script guide and then look at one story in absolute detail. And as most things that are planned in pubs, it kind of just evaporated into the ether. But I'd already done a chapter, so I kept that, and that's where Vault was born, really.
It is truly the outstanding. It's almost like the hold-it-in-your-hand equivalent of the quality of CaldorCity.com.
We know Caldor is quality. Well,
there you are, you see.
And I have to say, that's why Alan was the first person I went to do the Mechanical Planet audio, which is a joy.
Exactly.
To listen to. I think you can hear the first 2 minutes on the website.
It is, I mean, and our very own David Graham, bless him, still doing wonderful things, etc.
And the first time he'd voiced a Dalek since 1966. Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
Well, that's just part of the rich tapestry of life and proof that Nick Clegg has got something to look forward to. Is it? I don't know. It's a step away from that. Gareth, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on this, your debut on the Midweek Drive? Has it been okay for you, sir?
I've enjoyed it. You've been very, very gentle with me. So that's been great.
Can we prevail upon you to join us again in the not-too-distant future to keep us appraised of all matters? A round of applause for Gareth Cavanagh, please. Another
Thank
satisfied
you,
customer. And you will be too if you get hold of Volume 3, double issue of Warp Warp magazine. Sorry, I just went into sort of branding side of things. Here's Cat Stevens.
As I'm being followed by a moon shadow, leaping and hopping on a moon shadow. And if I ever lose my hands, lose my plow, lose my land, oh, if I ever lose my hands, oh, I won't have to work no more. And if I ever lose my eyes, if my colors all run dry, yes, if I ever lose my eyes, oh, I won't have to cry no more. Yes, I'm being followed by a moon shadow, moon shadow, moon shadow. Leaping and hopping on a moon shadow, moon shadow, moon shadow. And if I ever lose my legs, I won't moan and I won't beg. Oh, if I ever lose my legs, oh, if I won't have to walk no more. And if I ever lose my mouth, all my teeth, north and south, yes, if I ever lose my mouth, oh, if I won't have to talk. Take long to find me, I ask the faithful light. Oh, did it take long to find me? And are you
just to see your face instead of this place? Now I know what you mean to me. Ooh, and I wonder, is this the way life's meant? Thank you.
Okay then, let's take that little time machine and let's see if we can actually set the warp device for going back just a few days in time.
The Academy Award for Best Picture.
You're awesome. Come on. La La Land.
Yay! Congratulations to La La Land. Brilliant.
Yeah,
as predicted by Phil Lynas and Richard Fitzwilliams.
In Oscar history, winning 7 Oscars.
Tremendous. But not in this dimension, Hannah. Richard, what could possibly have happened to have actually taken away both yourself and Phil Lynas from that number one choice?
Well, let me point out that I did mentioned very, very strongly, I emphasized that whereas I thought La La Land would win, it was not a cert, and I stressed that Moonlight might overtake it, because there were certain straws in the wind. Now, here are the straws in the wind. Firstly, the Academy don't much like musicals. I say that because only Chicago's won since Oliver in 1968. Then, so many people I was meeting were either disappointed by La La Land or outright dislike, which is rather strange.
Like Phil Lynas, for instance. Although he did say
then
it was going to
again,
win.
We had the fact that it wasn't full of humble tunes. There was that aspect to it. Ryan Gosling was good, not outstanding. Bits of it were inaudible. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought it was an exuberant homage to Tinseltown and all the rest of it. I did think it would win 40 nominations. It was one of the Globes, the record 7. But Moonlight, it was a question of fantasy versus reality.
Well, Richard, we were going to actually sort of invite Liz Brewer to comment in her guise as our etiquette expert in terms of the protocol to be followed. But just for a few seconds, let's just return in time to actually find out when, obviously, La La Land learned that it hadn't been successful.
A little bit crazy. Arthur Horowitz, you are my fantasy baby. And to my kind, generous, talented, beautiful, blue-eyed wife and creative partner, Julia Hart, whew. You have inspired me to become the man I am right now, and more importantly, the man I'm still becoming. There's a lot of love in this room, and let's use it to create and champion bold and diverse work, work that inspires us towards joy, towards hope, and towards empathy.
Here's to the fools who made me dream, my uncle Gary Platt, my mentor Sam Cohn, my parents, my children, my wife Julie, on whose shoulders I've stood for 40 years because she insisted I reach for the stars, and to the Hollywood community that I'm so proud to be a part of, and to the Hollywood in the hearts and minds of people everywhere. Repression is the enemy of civilization. So keep dreaming, because the dreams we dream today will provide the love, the compassion, and the humanity that will narrate the stories of our lives tomorrow.
It's a bit like living the dream. That's all I can say. A bit like living the dream in every sense.
Hommage vous adore. Matt Pluff, you kicked this off. And Damien Chazelle, we're standing on your shoulders. We lost, by the way, but, you know.
Guys, I'm sorry.
No, there's a mistake. Moonlight, you guys won Best Picture.
Did you fall off your chair at that moment, Richard Fitzwilliams? Did you think,
what? Extraordinary, and when we realised that PricewaterhouseCoopers, who are the auditors, when we realised they were responsible for most ridiculous, apparently a routine that they make up two tickets, they print two tickets for every single winner. So the wrong ticket, the wrong envelope found its way into the hands of Warren Beatty, who wasn't quite sure what to do with it, handed it to Susan Sarandon, who hardly looked at it and just said, La La Land, and the confusion,
It was Faye Dunaway. Faye Dunaway, you see, you have Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway, Bonnie and Clyde, stealing the Oscars.
Oh, yes, and they didn't know. And the extraordinary thing is, this dates back, PricewaterhouseCoopers, a link with Hollywood dates back from 1940, because previously all the winners were, the newspapers were given under embargo, a list, and the newspaper broke an embargo, so PricewaterhouseCoopers boasted a record they could be proud of. Until now, when you have a catastrophe like that, and you have
quite literally hundreds of millions of people around the world seeing it and it being repaid, going viral, and it's humiliating.
We felt we had to do it, Richard, just to actually emphasise how wonderful we felt it was, really. It's good to enjoy it. We're standing shoulder to shoulder with our American Hollywood cousins here, Richard.
Well, I have to say that, I mean, it's sad, though, because it does take away somewhat from Moonrite's glory. And if you actually consider that all the discussion is about this and people are laughing at it and it's become a cause célèbre. But the problem is the real upset, that shock. Moonlight's win, an indie costing $5 million, film about with a gay theme, the first ever, a movie that was a critic's choice but an all-black cast, that it managed the impossible by beating La La Land, that is Hollywood history, and it's not what's being talked about, and that is the tragedy. When there's a mistake like that, people absolutely love it. To have lovies in them being mocked, and to have that sort of circus, which was just unbelievable. I mean, it's interesting that you paid back some of those acceptance speeches.
Heartwarming.
Yes, but that showed you how long it was before PricewaterhouseCoopers representatives were able to convince people that something was wrong.
Yeah, Richard, they're accountants. What do you expect? They're not used to all this sort of razzmatazz of the whole sequence. If they'd had Ricky Gervais, clearly it would never have happened. It would have run like clockwork.
I defend Jimmy Kimmel because although a few of his jokes fell flat, more hits than misses, and I thought, I'm being most amused, by the way, by the tourists, the subject of etiquette. What precisely is the etiquette when you film a bus full of unsuspecting tourists? Mm. The bus comes, they believe it's an art exhibition, and they go into the Dolby Theatre ballroom where the Oscars are being held, and they meet some of the world's top stars. Now, that is a confident academy, believing nothing will go wrong. It could have gone disastrously long in that. I mean, that's extraordinary. You know, they can meet Denzel Washington or Meryl Streep or whatever, and that was hilarious. That was side-splittingly funny, just as I was so amused by Jimmy Kimmel's tweeting Donald Trump. I mean, everything was going so smoothly. Mm-hmm. And as for the rumours that it was going to be a political evening, here's the problem with this. Meryl Streep's speech at the Golden Globes. She was accepting the Cecil B. DeMille Award. It was an achievement award. She had some 6 minutes. When you speak at the Oscars, you cannot do what Greer Garson did in the early 1940s.
I go on and on and on and on like a never-ending review. It's please, you know. It's
delightful.
Exactly.
You're now only given 45 seconds because the ceremony used to go over 4 hours. It was 4 hours 7, which was the longest, and that hit the ratings. So you're cut to 45 seconds, and you've got to thank your loved ones, your colleagues, those responsible for getting the picture made, all the rest of it. So you just don't have time. And one of the things about Oscar, and I say this when, you know, as you mentioned, it's been an absolute humiliation. But I say this.
I think that's a bit strong, Richard. Humiliation. I mean, I think, you know, there are people living in parts of Africa who might sort of have other humiliating experiences. So, you know, that's...
Well, I mean, this is the last...
It can happen. It can happen. That's the bottom line.
Everyone makes mistakes.
Precisely. let's move to the nub of this telephone conversation, which is...
Conversation is that the Oscars has a cachet, and you can see it in those speeches. So when you see, and it's very, very interesting, Viola Davis, Mahershala Ali, Emma Stone, when they won respectively for Best Supporting Actress, Actor, and also Best Actress, you could see in those speeches how much it meant to them, and I thought they were superb.
Richard, let's hold it there, because this is the time we need to compare your predictions with Phil Leonis's predictions. We could do it when Phil comes on in a few moments, but we thought, no, you have the honour. I suspect you might have won. So let's go through these, all right? You've got yours. Phil predicted La La Land for Best Picture. So did you.
Yep.
So I think, you know, it's honest.
With the caveat that it might.
Hannah, take note here. We may need to come to you in the event of any sort of arbitration that's needed.
Okay.
Yes. Well, I said that, and I mean, you know, you.
Okay. Best director, Richard. You went for.
I went for Damien Chazelle.
As indeed did Phil Leonis.
Okay. So it was assert.
Yeah. Best actor.
Best actor. I thought it would be Affleck, as I remember. But I did think it would be very, very, very close, and you could see in Denzel Washington's face he crushed, because he'd won at the Screen Actors Guild, and almost all of their winners win at the Oscars.
So, Phil, certainly it's locked. They're locked here in all sorts of ways. Best actress, Phil, went for Emma Stone.
We both went for Emma Stone. I did say Isabel Hopper was a strong contender, and if you saw her face when Emma Stone's name was announced, I think she thought so too.
Yeah, well, you know, Isabel, get over it, all right? Get over it. Or as they say, as they say in France, Alex. Quel dommage. Quel dommage. Okay. Moving on. Best supporting actor. Phil actually put in a plug for Mahershala Ali in Moonlight.
Well, yes.
Best supporting actress. I think we both agreed with Viola Davis in Fences.
Everyone was agreed.
Best original screenplay, Kenneth Lonergan, Manchester by the Sea. That was Phil's choice.
That's what I said.
It's going to be... How are we going to separate them? You know? If only I got the wrong envelope. Best adapted screenplay... You went for?
Moonlight.
And indeed is Phil. Best foreign language film. What was your choice, Richard?
Well, I thought it would be Tony Erdmann, but towards the end, I suspected The Salesman had an excellent chance because we had rumours, because of the Trump's travel ban, meant Asghar Farhadi, its director, wouldn't be travelling to the States in protest, that the ban would be overturned, it was unconstitutional. I did favour Tony Erdmann, but okay. I did again say that it could be The Salesman.
And Phil Lina said Tony Erdmann.
Yes, we both did, you see.
So exactly. It's almost as though they're sort of... It's like a never-ending saga here.
Wow. Best animated, he said Zootropia, yes. And I said Zootropolis, because that's called by both names.
Different names. And finally, best documentary feature?
I thought it might be 13th. He probably got O.J.
He did have O.J. Made in America.
Yes,
and that
yes.
was indeed the winner. That means that Phil Linus has conquered all.
With that one point.
By a very narrow majority.
With that,
1 point. He's tied up until that one.
Exactly. There was the whole... Take that Brexit. Take that Donald Trump. Well, actually, he's taken it, obviously. And there we have in the first of what I'm sure will be the annual Price Waterhouse supervised Linus Fitzwilliams Midweek Drive Challengers. We see Phil Linus has actually taken that trophy. It's like the America's Cup.
He got Casey Affleck too, didn't he?
He did indeed get Casey Affleck for Best Actor, yes.
I did say it had to be Washington. That was too close to call, and the winner was going to be very, very close. Best Actress was going to be close-ish. And Erdmann, at the very, very end, you could see things turning to The Salesman, but the others did go as predicted, and it's interesting that... You know, that it was such a night. But, I mean, the fact is, become unforgettable and will enter Oscar lore. I noticed in the 1930s there were a couple of occasions. On one occasion, an actress had to be tackled by her escort when she thought she'd won. And on another, when, from the rostrum, the presenter called out, "Come and take it, Frank." Both Frank Lloyd and Frank Capra got up, and Capra was walking towards the stage, and of course he realised that the other Frank had won.
These things happen, and you know that's part of what makes them just that little bit more memorable. I gather you like the frocks as well, Richard.
Well, the frocks are fantastic, and I mean one of the things that gives me such joy to see that number of really, really spectacular ones. You know that Amy Adams is going to be gorgeous. You know that Emma Stone is really going to appear and look luminous, and Isabel Hooper too. There was one or two frights, but on the whole, yes, and also Dakota Johnson looked well. Despite 50 Shades Darker, I thought she shone.
Just goes to show that happiness rules in the end. As we said, Richard, special bonus appearance on the evening edition of the Midweek Drive here. Gala Liz Brewer, I also connected with your good self, having recently returned from Dubai, so it's nice to see you.
Well, we went to the Kuwaiti National Day together,
Time we see Liz, tell her, answer the telephone, Liz, otherwise we can't put you on air. You know, it's difficult, right? Bless her heart, she's normally very good, and she precedes a whole range of things there, but this evening, clearly, other things have cropped up in the Brewer scenario. Still, life
it's
continues.
It's been good to catch up about... and Oscars that, I have to say, I did quite a large number of pieces on it, and it was certainly dramatic. It held the headlines.
It added to the rich tapestry of life just that little bit further forward. I mean, did you see the Oscars ceremony, of course, Tessa, or did you say, I'll wait until Richard reveals something?
I didn't actually see the ceremony. I watched E! News when they're all arriving, and they obviously show off their outfits and everything before the actual show. I didn't, unfortunately, I think I was busy, so I still haven't seen it. I obviously saw the La La Land and Moonlight clip on social media, so, but no.
If you PricewaterhouseCoopers, what would you do? How would you commit harakiri? The answer, I mean, I do think they'd be worrying whether or not the Academy will retain them, because there is no question. And the fact, it's interesting, Alex, you played, as I say, you played those, the actual, they showed the length of the time before this was discovered, because that they tried to make out in an initial statement, it was immediately corrected. It wasn't. Not at all.
No. Done away. Well, you see, if nothing else, we always believe in verisimilitude and the truth as far as the Midweek Drive is concerned, and that really is at the heart of our whole particular piece. Hannah,
well, I think Warren Beatty, it's very interesting, Beatty kept that envelope, but he wouldn't let go of it because he felt that he'd be blamed. Faye Dunaway undoubtedly, I think, just saw La La Land and didn't see Emma Stone and, you know, just called it out. But they, of course, were given the wrong envelope, and it is a fact that PricewaterhouseCoopers, I think some form of punishment.
Come, Richard, you know, other accountants are available, and I'm sure there'll be messages coming across to that effect fairly shortly. Hannah, any particular sort of final wrap-ups? Because obviously it's tomorrow morning where we'll connect with Richard again when you get our lists out, and we'll have another two Richard Fitzwilliams movies to regale us. We can now actually put the Oscar ceremony to bed as far as Richard
yes.
Fitzwilliams and
the Tuck it away.
Tuck it away.
Forget about it until next time.
Leave
never
it
to forget
actually
about it. No one will ever forget about this.
No, I can't see that happening.
Well, that's clearly. I mean, I'm sure that the Chilpack Hollywood people will forget about it. Sort of literally.
We ought to mention one thing, and I really do think we should stress this, and that it was an absolute triumph for diversity, because with the Oscar So White hashtag in the last couple of years, what we'd had was 7 out of 20 persons of colour in the acting nominations. 4 out of the 9 movies. It should have been all 10, because I thought Nocturnal Animals and and Silence lost out badly. 4 out of the 9, though, told their stories, which I thought was excellent. 4 out of the 5 in the documentary category were African-American, and 3 out of 5 in the adapted screenplay. They really did show, with 683 new members, 46% female, 41% persons of colour, you know, that there is a new attitude, and this especially also with very, very strong roles for women. They couldn't even fit in Annette Bening for 20th Century Women. They couldn't even fit in Amy Adams for Nocturnal Animals or Arrival. So it just shows how tight the category was, and, you know, that is all to the good, too, and it shows change is happening and Hollywood is modernizing. And also, I have to commend Mel Gibson's return, because, you know, though he's a very angry
10 seconds, Richard, 10 seconds.
He is someone of very considerable talent.
Hannah, last two questions, please.
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today?
I have.
And will you be joining us again soon?
I look forward to it.
Be tomorrow morning then, or if you're listening in Los Angeles, because many people actually like to check out Richard Fitzwilliams as he delivers it, 20 past midnight or thereabouts. So it's just after midnight.
Worth staying up for.
I would have thought so. I mean, after all, what else do they do in California? Probably sort of treat the accountants in some way, shape, or form.
Hey there, everybody! I'm filmmaker, podcaster, California State Certified Violence Prevention Specialist, and podiatrist to the stars, Phil Lernis, and I've been proud to be a U.S. cultural correspondent for Alex Lefchuk's Midweek Drive program for many years now. And I congratulate you, dear listener, on having found this oasis of podcast audio magic in the cosmos, or on your internet-equipped mobile device, or your computer, or...
turning into motion, we could ride the white blue ocean, come our way. Like a bird, we'll soon be flying way up in the sky, and for a while, forget your worries, say goodbye. Gotta get away. Once we're heading down the track, gotta get away. Then there'll be no turning back, gotta get away. Where the sky is blue above, and the sun shines down. Far away, we can touch the new horizon way up.
course, Hannah, if you check out True Entertainment, each evening between 9 and 11, you can see the episodes that featured that particular track in one magical moment of 1970 magic. That was called Overture, of course. Gotta Get Away.
10:30 a.m. in L.A. can only mean it's time for the Midweek Drive team to welcome their top Californian cultural correspondent, Phil Leonis, back for another segment of Cultural Perspicacity.
But what, of course, Hannah, you might well ask, is the series called? What is the series called that we were listening to from that point of view? What is the series called?
I don't know.
Roger Moore? Tony Curtis? What does it have to be, Phil Leonis?
The Persuaders.
There we are. See, sort of. You see the immaculate way in which we planned that, thanks to our accountant friends who actually got everything working perfectly well. So we could actually
I had the wrong envelope.
No, exactly. We had that moment's pause where we're thinking, where do we go? You know, do we fill until Tessa actually returns from powdering her nose? I don't know. It's life. Congratulations,
go.
Phil Leonis. Well done.
Oh, yes.
You heard the official release there. It's now the challenge that's...
Well, you know, look, Alex, just to be nominated, I'm a winner.
Exactly.
And, but in fairness to the great Richard Fitzwilliams, I know the difference between Faye Dunaway and Susan Sarandon. But also, I know that why should he be any different? I know the difference between Moonlight and La La Land. And clearly the Academy doesn't know that. But, I had a home field advantage. I had a home pitch advantage, I guess, as you would say there. And, so I am making America great again by beating Brits in the predictions over our Academy Awards. But, see, I would expect that he would be able to defeat me if we predicted the BAFTAs, and maybe we ought to. Maybe like the America's Cup. I mean, this ought to go back and forth, don't you think? The other thing, well, please go on. But I've got a lot of thoughts about this this snafu.
Yeah.
And how wonderful it was. Please, go ahead. Sorry.
Tessa, welcome back.
Hello. Hi, Phil.
As Phil's rightly said...
How are you,
Tessa? I'm good, thank you.
I was quite amazed that President Trump didn't actually refer to the Leonis Fitzwilliams challenge, you know, in his recent speech.
Yeah.
But life continues. Yeah. You heard from Phil... You heard from Richard in terms of her views. We haven't managed to get in touch with Liz Brewer, but still, maybe that's because she used to represent Ivana Trump. I don't know.
Perhaps, I don't know.
Liz will return. I have no doubt about that. But, Phil, we now have the full segment that is duly yours to share your own views on the Midweek Drive, because I don't think even Chilpack Hollywood has quite reached the stage of being able to reflect productively from Australia and indeed from Los Angeles on this awesome experience.
No, I think I might actually be able to save a good 20 minutes of doing my show this week, because maybe I'll just talk about Best Picture, and then that way I can just use your podcast version of my appearance and put it on my show. Won't that be... you know what? I'm at the point in my life where I need to start doing these things. I need to double up on them. But anyway, let's start with this exciting bit of news, the groundbreaking news that for the first time a film with a gay or an LGBT theme won Best Picture. Films such as this had won other awards before. But what I don't understand about that bit of revisionist history of how far we've come is, didn't Lawrence of Arabia win Best Picture in 1962? And yes, it did. And did that not deal with LGBT themes? Yes, it did. Was the character of Lawrence gay? Yes, he was. So I think it's interesting that, of all people, also historian and British historian Richard Fitzwilliams would get suckered by that little bit of propaganda.
Nice. We'll bring that up tomorrow morning, I think, Hannah.
No, we're putting the Oscars to bed tomorrow morning.
Yes, you're quite right.
So I also am just shocked by all these people who are so outraged and think this was the worst thing. And, I mean, part of it might be, as an American, I'm getting used to this, right? Like there's no way they'll vote for Brexit. What? Brexit won?
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, going to the big parties to celebrate Hillary Clinton's certain presidential victory. Wait, what happened? Wait, what? What? I mean, every major news event, it feels like there's Warren Beatty handing the wrong envelope to Susan Sarandon. So this just felt like just kind of the perfect American tapper to where we've to where we've been.
Do you mean this felt like it?
I think you guys should keep it anyway. Very unfortunate what happened. Personally, I blame Steve Harvey for this.
Yeah, of course you could say that before he became Voice of the Universe, Mike Dooley used to work for Pricewaterhouse. I shall say no more. Never mind.
Well, and you know what Mike Dooley would say is that there's no such things as accidents.
Exactly.
That things happen for a reason. And this thing that it's unfair to Moonlight, come on. Moonlight will be remembered by a much larger group of people because of this. The Oscar winners who turned down their Oscars are remembered much more than the ones who gave acceptance speeches.
Yeah.
And so this absolutely, the surprise of it, the drama of it, helps, especially when, look, the Oscars were a very good show, and I've read so many reviews that say, for the first time in years, we get a great Oscar show, and it's undone by this ending. Please, it is always so anticlimactic that at the end of the show, all there is here's another winner, and then there's a speech, and then there's no big conclusion to the show. And when you're putting on a show, you need a big, big show-stopping number. And this gave it. So it was great entertainment. It was great television. Moonlight will be remembered because of it. And despite how great this show was, it's the least watched Oscar show in 10 years. There's many reasons for this, one of which is there weren't as many big stars nominated this year with chances to win. Last year we knew DiCaprio had a good chance to win. He's a huge star. A lot of people tuned in to see that. This year, not so much so. Also, people hadn't seen the films as much. That hurts Oscar telecasts. And finally, I think there was a real fear that this was going to become a hugely political show, and I think a lot of people on both sides just didn't want that. And it did not become that, and it didn't become that largely through the brilliance of Jimmy Kimmel's hosting. He addressed the elephant in the room, elephant being the symbol for the Republican Party, and but he also took kind of the air out of it. He did just enough, and then he left very little room for anyone to make it a political night. So I think people missed out on a very good show. But I think they missed out because they feared that. You can be assured that next year's ratings are going to be enormous because of what happened, because everybody's going to tune in hoping to see another spectacular car crash on stage. So I just think it's great all the way around. I do think, obviously, your heart goes out a little bit for the team from La La Land that goes up there thinking they've won and then they have it snatched from them. But again, how beautiful that the producer gets to give a speech about the importance of empathy, and then he gets to embody his very words. It certainly was great that he, you know, the stage manager brought the producer the card first. He didn't grab the host and have the host interrupt. He didn't have Beatty interrupt. He went to the producer first so that the producer could have a moment to decide, albeit a brief moment, but what kind of face do I put on this? How do I do this? How do I form a relationship to it? And I think that's a wonderful thing. So that's all the good. Now, it being PricewaterhouseCoopers' fault is an interesting thing. I mean, I would never blame, I guess, an actor for not reading what they're handed, even though the envelope says on the outside, clearly on national television, we could all see that the envelope said best actress in a leading role. So why he didn't bother reading the envelope when it was handed to him, I don't know. But he's an actor of a certain age, so we'll grant him his confusion.
Heaven can wait, Phil. Heaven can wait.
But the stage manager is the one that knew this. And how did the stage manager know? I mean, are we being told that the accountants told the stage manager? Because I will let you in on a little tip that might help with your Oscar pools if you're only filling out your Oscar pools at the beginning of the shows. But a friend who is in production design has pointed out that since she started paying attention to this, the winner for Best Picture is always reflected in the set on the Oscar telecast itself, which means someone other than the accountants knows who Best Picture is. In fact, this year's set, if you look, you'll see moons and moonlight shining through the backdrop on the Oscar set. So this woman has never guessed Best Picture wrong. As a result, at the beginning of the show, she looks at the set and she tells us who's going to win. It's not necessarily scientific, but I like it.
It could be Vladimir Putin's attempts to actually build better bridges. That's the important thing. Exactly. Anyway, having discussed that, Hannah, where else do you wish to take Phil on this little soiree in which he may not have had a chance to listen to any of the show before Richard Fitzwilliams with Warp Warp and all that excitement that we actually had? That, it's entirely up to your good self, really, as we sort of begin to tuck the bags together.
Yeah. Well, food's on my mind at the moment, and I didn't celebrate Pancake Day yesterday due to the Harry Potter quiz, so I'm having them tonight. So I was wondering, Phil,
of course, you should have, because obviously it's a heathen who obviously would celebrate on Ash Wednesday, because when I was supposed to actually have ashes upon our purse, we're supposed to go through 40 days of Lent. It was when you used up all those ingredients last night in Shrove Tuesday and Mardi Gras. That's it. So actually, you are possibly dealing with some dodgy voodoo doogee things there, Hannah, but if you want to.
I like to live life on the edge. What can I say?
That's why you're on the show, dear.
But Phil, did you have pancakes, or are you going to have pancakes?
Flapjacks, I think they refer to them as, basically.
Flapjacks.
If I'm an Air Force flyer in 1944, that's what they call them.
American pancakes. Then.
Back in my day, Phil, it was always flapjacks. Carry on.
You know, we do have something here called the International House of Pancakes. We don't call it's not the International House of Flapjacks. Flapjacks sounds like a game that I would play in a casino in Vegas, right? Flapjack. Always bet on black when you're playing flapjacks. I did not. I have not. I was at the Breakfast Club this morning, and so I was having the traditional ham and eggs breakfast. But we did have a startling, I was going to say a rousing rendition of When the Saints Go Marching In, and maybe maybe Alex can dial that up in the midst of playing little bits of music beneath me right now.
Okay. I just thought you'd appreciate that. Carry on.
But in the middle of this performance of When the Saints Go Marching In, one of our elder members of the club, in fact, our longest standing member of the club, Dr. Jim Whitney, suddenly took the microphone and interrupted as if he didn't hear that the band was playing, and the band never got to resume When the Saints Go Marching In. So that was the end of my revelry, though the Oscar event that I attended was in part also a Carnival event. So and the last time I had been to Wayne Manor, where this party was held, was for Twelfth Night. So it brought full circle the season. But finally, there's two phrases I really love that you mentioned, and I didn't realize how much I love them until I heard you say them. Pancake Day and Harry Potter quiz are kind of the two best phrases I've ever heard.
That was my day yesterday. Yeah, unfortunately, no pancakes, but yeah, pancakes are today. Hopefully.
That's your memoir. That's the title for your memoir, Pancake Day, or Days. Make it plural. That just sounds cooler.
Yeah.
Pancake Days and Harry Potter Quizzes.
I like that. Yeah. I'll make a note of that to remember for the day when I'm old and gray and writing down my life story.
Well, it happens.
I'll credit Phil in the little what's it?
He'll still be going. Phil intends to be around.
Oh my goodness!
546. It's time jumping in every sense of the word.
Oh, absolutely. I won't be on original factory parts, but I'll
allowing for the fact that you are taking Lily Holloman through episode by episode this particular scenario of 17 shows from the Patrick McGowan classic series The Prisoner, have you got any indication in terms of which episode this comes from, Phil? I just left it hanging there for a moment.
Free for all?
Yay! A round of applause, please. Which is curiously all about voting and various other factors, and number 6 stands for the governorship of the village, and it's just wonderful. Free for all.
May I give a little recitation?
Please, Alex? Please.
Some say 6 of one, half a dozen the other, but I say 6 or 2, and 2 for nothing, and 6 for free, for all, for free. Vote, vote, vote.
see how he actually moved from Anna Lewis's poetic piece to Phil Leonis's poetic piece. It just shows that we think about this programme.
Yeah,
we craft it together. The rehearsals pay dividends, as indeed Damien Chazelle said when he received the Oscar again.
Oh, or when he was having the Oscar clutched from his hand.
Exactly.
couldn't we have, at the risk of being over-rehearsed, couldn't have someone planned this? Yeah.
Well, it could set an interesting fashion for when, you know, a year or so's time, Hannah and Tessa go to graduate. You get up to the cathedral, and just as you're about to receive... Sorry, no.
It's not wrong one.
Wrong one.
We've given you the wrong one.
wrong degree certificate. Oh, yeah, like that.
It makes good television, though, doesn't it? You know, it gives everybody a shock.
And it's an award. It's an award.
Exactly.
You know, like the... What was it? Was it the Steve Harvey reference, I guess, is that to Miss Universe, right? The Miss Universe pageant?
Yeah.
And I think the only reason any of us know that there still is a Miss Universe pageant is because of that snafu.
Yeah,
right?
That's
I would argue that both the winner and the runner-up, within whatever circles care about those things, they are both more famous than any of their predecessors because of it. And look, life is going to throw you unexpected wrinkles, right?
Exactly.
Things are not always going to go as planned, and how we deal with those and you know, how nimbly we handle that really is a wonderful opportunity. It's a wonderful opportunity for us and to see how gracefully and graciously everybody handled it. Why is that a bad thing? It's actually a very inspiring thing. And, oh, by the way, it's a trophy. It's a trophy for a non-competitive sport. Nobody, you know, it's not a referee being paid to intentionally alter the outcome of a game.
Jello
so
wrestling between Susan Sarandon and Meryl Streep must be a possibility, let alone Faye Dunaway. Hannah, in the absence of Natasha Armstrong, who's currently busily doing her work placement somewhere we know not where, it falls to your good self to actually do the official Los Angeles Breakfast Club Huffington Post read-through from today. So would you like to take a couple of paragraphs there just to actually set the scene once again for our shameless plug for our Los Angeles Breakfast Club podcast, courtesy of our friends at Chilpack Hollywood. Hannah, over to you.
Do you want the first two paragraphs?
I think the first two paragraphs will be fine.
Though sound casting may be as fresh as a digital medium gets, its roots stretch back almost a century to when radio broadcasting began. Included in those early days were broadcasts from an organization called the Los Angeles Breakfast Club, a group made up of Southern California business people, celebrities, and just plain folks who got together every Wednesday morning to eat, network, and listen to guest speakers. And I can't see the second paragraph.
It does this every time, doesn't it? Carry on.
Okay. Established in 1925, the Los Angeles Breakfast Club is still going, although it almost didn't make it, and is seeing resurgence in interest thanks to efforts of new, younger members, such as board president Lily Holloman. She, in turn, got Phil Leonis involved in the club.
There you are, isn't
Aww.
It? Another effortlessly delivered midweek drive interview, which Phil may or may not choose to use.
It turns out, though, that she was trying to get Moonlight involved.
Wrong article.
Too soon. Yeah, so we just had the second episode of Los Angeles Breakfast Club on the air drop earlier this week, and this has been fun. This is really like building a time machine. I'm finding out. I used much of the first hour of the show, the previous month, to air some particularly historic and significantly historic clips featuring the likes of President Calvin Coolidge and California Governor in the 1920s, C.C. Young. But so many names got mentioned in those clips, and much of the Los Angeles Breakfast Club history has been lost for a variety of reasons. And it's been fantastic hearing from people and then being able to do some research based on this this historic footage to learn so much about this club that I am a part of and be able to share that with the other members and then be able to share that with listeners on episode two. So I think it will be this really interesting kind of exercise in detection and time travel week after week while also playing plenty of good songs and having a lot of fun comedy and those things.
Clinton has now officially been put on the broadcasting map, with Tessa Snart taking midweek drivette duties to a whole new level.
Sorry, Phil, but if Tessa doesn't get her...
Well, there was a website. There was a website that was... There was a website that was nowhere listed in that ad, but anyway.
Go for
that. We have a new website for hosting the podcast, but nobody cares.
No, we do.
No, we want to know. Exactly. I want to know. I was going to say where can we listen.
Saying, oh, stop it. Stop it.
No, we really would. Please.
It's LA Breakfast Club, labreakfastclub.libsyn, LIBSYN. That's the podcast host. LABreakfastClub.libsyn.com.
Oh, thank you.
Have you written that down, Hannah?
In my mind.
In her mind, it's written down. And I'm going
just
to...
Just don't show it to Faye Dunaway, because it'll come out totally different.
I'm going to California, in my mind. A number between 2 and 27, please, Hannah.
7.
Sure about that?
Yes.
Definitely? Positively? Yes.
Okay. Absolutely.
When in a hurry, step one for changing the entire world is falling in love with it as it already is. Same for changing yourself. You like the universe.
There we are.
It was short and sweet, but it was nice.
Important that we actually put things into perspective here, as I'm sure Phil will attest to. I think it's Michael's Musical Madness that comes up at 7 o'clock, and then we've got...
So.
Michael Barwise, that would be. Yeah. And then we actually have another poetry epic with Christopher Clarkson and all sorts of other exciting things there. The Oscar Effect, tick. Fantasy Paradigm, Casting Challenge, well...
What was the casting challenge?
Finding the right person to do Vorp Vorp.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Contemporary milieu. Well, Cameron Tilbury, no show. Second show in a week. Second show in a fortnight, actually.
It's not good.
Vanished. Even Phil's quite shocked at that. I can tell because he's almost dropped the phone and handed it over to Fuzz Aldrin. Anna Lewis, thankfully, was on good form. So was Adrian Rigglesford. So was Gareth Kavanagh and Richard Fitzwilliam as well. A little treat there. There's another little treat in California. If you're actually around at 1 a.m. tomorrow morning, so I don't know if you have any insomniacs that might
be
around.
Oh, I might be up to then anyway.
In California.
Not in California.
Anyway,
she's got teleportation.
1 a.m. California, 9 a.m. UK time. Louis Savvy comes back. Oh, yes, it's a return.
Yay!
Exactly. I'm glad you can celebrate and rejoice that particular aspect, Phil, because it's always important when Louis returns. Particularly as actually calendar providers will see Louis Savvy. It's his month. Now, big question, Phil. Waited until this moment in time. Did Sam Stone and David J. Howe succeed in their mule duties that we gave them when I physically handed them a copy of the Midweek Drive calendar and said, please deliver this safely to Phil Leonis in Los Angeles when you see him at the Breakfast Club and for the Connections? Has it arrived with you?
Lily, what was the review of the Siren FM calendar? She said life-alteringly fabulous. Later she'll give me the real envelope, because that's not what I remember the review being. But yes, we have the calendar. I realized that I was driving, and so I didn't actually see it. So I need to get it from her. And
you can see Lisa.
Oh, she did have a complaint. She had a complaint, that, and this is absolutely true. Her complaint was that there needed to be more pictures of Alex.
You see, he takes all the photographs.
Yeah, he doesn't let
us get the camera. We'll strive to get some pictures of him.
You know what you should do? You should just use the same photo of him over and over again, like, and crop him into other photos.
We'll crop him in.
Calendar of Alex.
We need more Phil Leonis there as well. Of course, say if you look in March this time, you can see it's Louis Savvy actually in the calendar. And Tessa, you're in most months.
That's
important. So very good stuff. All right, that's it. That's pretty much a wrap. We're out of here. Take us up to the news. Bon Jovi, In These Arms, and Billy Joel, I Go to Extremes.
Good songs.
I know, yeah. Outrageously
like
wonderful.
Yes.
But we haven't asked Phil those last two questions, and it does say in this envelope here. So, Tessa. Where you go, please.
Are you sure that's right? You're sure it's not Hannah? You've got the right name. No. Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us?
Yes. When do we start?
Well, will you be joining us again next week? And I guess we'll start again then.
Yes, I will be joining you next week, and I think we have something to talk about after the show here, don't we, Alex?
Yes. We're referring, of course, to a special podcast we're doing for the Delights of the Searchers, which will be next week.
Oh, okay.
Not this week. As we're moving on.
We will be doing it.
We
okay.
will be doing it next week. That's, yes.
Good.
It's like sorting out one's life in all sorts of ways. Don't forget, Lady Killers is still available and out there. And how long are we before the official unveiling, Phil? Of the...
What? Of the Lady Killers?
Yes.
Of the Lady Killers. Okay, the official unveiling is Sunday, March 26th.
Write that down. We're literally just a couple of weeks.
It's Mother's Day.
Exactly, and 1 week after we've had the Telefantasy and Society Symposium 2, the Stone Tape Symposium.
Yay.
Amazing. Thanks to Hannah, thanks to Tessa, thanks to you, dear listener. It's time for us to say bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Take a look into these eyes. They burn with fire. Yeah. Until the end of time.